First case is 05-2128, Catherine Stridsberg versus Geico General Insurance Company. Mr. Stridsberg.
Morning. My name is Roger Stridsberg, and I represent the plaintiff appellant. If it pleases the court, I'd like to divide my time 5 minutes opening and 10 minutes rebuttal.
Watch your time there on the clock.
I will attempt to watch it. And I would like to stipulate my briefs as part of my argument with certain clarifications of my reply brief. This case is an interesting case because it involves a college student away from home and a policy of uninsured motorist insurance and medical payments coverage insurance. So the question seems to come down to whether or not intention rules or whether the place of residence for purposes of uninsured motorist coverage is the factual place of abode of a college student, or whether it is actually a mixture of both of these things.
Mr. Stridsberg, let me ask you a threshold question. As you know, I did not vote to allow this case to review in the merits because it seemed to me that whatever we write is going to be controlled by Pennsylvania law, and that that's not much precedent for us in Ohio. Am I wrong on that, or why should we write a merit decision in this case?
Because the language in this policy is common to all of these policies with certain variations. The question of what is the place of residence for purpose of these policies of a college student away from home is something that is actually more important when you think about it than it appears in terms of the numbers of cases that we deal with. Children are going away to college all the time. When they leave, do they leave their home? Is their residence gone with their parents? Are they no longer covered under an insurance policy?
In that regard, Mr. Stridsberg, may I ask you a question?
Certainly.
It seems to me as though the facts of this case are rather specific. The college student here designated her residence in Ohio after her parents had moved to Pennsylvania for purposes of getting the benefit of in-state tuition for Kent State University.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I think that's a red herring. The matter of...
You don't think we should give any weight to the fact that the student had designated her residence in Ohio, in Clark County, and not her parents' residence?
Well, first of all...
And doesn't that make the case factually different from all of those where students don't do that?
Well, at the time that the designation was made, she was living in Clark County, Ohio, and her parents were living in Clark County, Ohio.
But she didn't designate their residence as hers. She designated her grandmother's residence, did she not?
No, that was later, I believe, that she designated her grandmother's residence, but that was...
After the parents moved.
That was, I believe, after the accident. Look, getting into the subject of how one gets tuition help becomes a little bit complex, and it's not the same kind of residence as is involved in this case, or as is involved in simply living somewhere with your family.
Was there a designation on the police report form by her mother that she was not a resident of Pennsylvania, but rather a resident of Ohio?
No, her mother, there's in my brief, I call attention to that, and there's a page in the brief that shows the testimony of the mother about that, the exact testimony. In fact, I think I may have quoted it. And what the mother said is simply that she was injured, she was in the hospital, this was after the accident had occurred, this was after she had a hole knocked in her head. I'm that's graphic, but that, in fact, is what happened. And she was going to be staying there close to her doctors for treatment. And that's what happened. But getting back to the tuition matter, this involves student loans. And you have to qualify for it. Now, obviously, she didn't have a chance to qualify for anything in Pennsylvania. She went to college at the end of August 2001, the very end of it, and 1st of November, end of October, her family moved the house to Pennsylvania and moved everything she had in it with them. And lo and behold, on the 25th of November, which was Thanksgiving, 25 days later, the family came back to Grandma's house for Thanksgiving dinner. So she never got a chance to go to their home in Pennsylvania. She had been there in March of that year when they were thinking about moving, and she looked at the house that they intended to move into. But until after Christmas, or until Christmas came along, she didn't have any opportunity to go home with her parents. The first opportunity to go home was at Christmas time, and she went home. Now, she had to rely on transportation of other people because she didn't have a driver's license. Her driver's license had been taken away by the fact that she had several speeding tickets. So she didn't have a driver's license. She had to get transportation from Kent State in Ravenna, I believe. And in this case, her sister, Megan, was a student at Ohio State University, had her own car, and drove to Springfield to pick her up, and then took her to the parents' home where they both stayed. Now, interestingly enough, Ohio State is on the quarter system, and Kent State is on the semester system. So when they came back from Pennsylvania, from the family home in Pennsylvania, Catherine had to stay in Springfield, which she could with her grandmother, for a few days, because Kent State didn't start up again until later on.
Well, Counsel, before you, I mean, we're all familiar with the facts here. Counsel?
Yes, ma'am. Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
Is she a dependent of her parents?
At the time?
Yes.
Absolutely.
And were they responsible for her education cost in it, those that were not covered by tuition?
Yes.
Did she represent herself as independent when she applied for school loans?
No.
So the parents' income?
It's not in the record, but the fact is she didn't.
All right. So the only distinction here is that the household moved to Pennsylvania and she remained at school.
That's correct. All right. Now, my 5 minutes have gone by and I have slightly less than 7 minutes left, so I will reserve my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stritzberg. Mr. Newman.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Under Pennsylvania law, the determination of a college student's residence pursuant to an insurance policy is a matter of fact for the fact finder. In this case, it is pretty clear that Pennsylvania law applies. As a matter of fact, that was stipulated. And in Pennsylvania, the term resident is unambiguous, meaning it's actually where one factually lives. In this particular case, for a fact finder to determine the residence for purposes of an insurance policy, it's measured by the degree of regular contact with the insured's household. In fact, as we cited in the Strauss case, the fact finder looks at a totality of circumstances. And that is exactly what the trial court did in this case.
Well, counsel, in your view, under Pennsylvania law, could a college student ever be, if they're a college student in another state, could they ever be a resident of Pennsylvania?
Yes, Justice, and I think the Pennsylvania courts leave that option open. And I think we even conceded that in our brief, that certainly under Pennsylvania law, students can be residents of two places. In fact, the seminal case would be the Donegal case.
Okay. That would really be the norm, wouldn't it? That students are still covered under their parents' policies, because the outcome here that you advocate essentially means she's not covered at all, period.
Well, Your Honor, I would think there is no norm, and that's exactly why there has to be a factual determination in college student cases.
Am I correct, though, the outcome that you're advocating, forget underinsured and uninsured, she's driving, say she takes the parents' car to college, or they give her a car. She's not.
I agree conceptually whether it's underinsured. In fact, a lot of these cases we cited didn't deal with the underinsured, it dealt with an exclusion policy. So the analysis really goes to whether
so
or not she's a resident.
If you prevail, she essentially has no insurance, automobile insurance, period.
From GEICO. Actually, she had automobile insurance from the grandmother. It was established and stipulated that the co-defendant, Cincinnati, did have an insurance policy with the grandmother, and she wasn't insured under that policy. Because on the day of the accident, December 28, 2001, it was clear she resided with the grandmother at that time. She was at the house during that period of time. Of course, the accident, she was in a car.
And if we're to disagree with you, we have to find an abuse of discretion? Is that the standard?
I would think when the matter was before the trial court, and he was actually the fact finder, and he was finding the facts, I would submit to the court that it should be an abuse of discretion, because he was able to weigh the evidence, judge the credibility of the witnesses, and determine the facts. And even if it was against the manifest weight of the evidence, in this case, I think the evidence is very clear based on the method.
So for the Court of Appeals to overturn that finding, they would have to find an abuse of discretion.
That's what we argued at the Court of Appeals, and I would still submit that.
And we would have to find that they were wrong in not finding an abuse of discretion.
In interpreting Pennsylvania law, that's exactly correct, Your Honor.
And how many residences, I'm over here, how many residences can a college student have?
It depends on the facts.
Could this college student have one at Kent State, one in Pennsylvania, and one in Clark County?
Hypothetically, Your Honor, I agree that is a possibility. And that's why there is no norm in determination of college student from the get-go. You actually have to look at the totality of circumstances with that individual college student. What's determinative of this case, I believe, is the fact that of the at least the five non-existent list of items a trial court should look at, or a fact finder should look at, one of them was exactly what this particular individual, this 18-year-old young lady, did when she affirmatively made her residence at the grandmother's house. She did testify, and it is in the record on the examination under oath, that she did transfer her residence from her parents' South Vienna address to her grandmother's after the move, meaning the move of November 1st.
After her parents moved to Pennsylvania.
Correct.
Is the term residence defined in the policy of insurance?
No, it is not, Your Honor, and Pennsylvania law is clear. If it's not defined, Pennsylvania reverts to the common law definition, and that is factual place of abode. It actually is actual living in a house. Intent doesn't matter in this case. In fact, under Pennsylvania law, the intention of Catherine Stridsberg is really doesn't really matter when you're looking at the factual analysis of whether she actually lived in that house. She never resided in that Pennsylvania home. She resided in the South Vienna address. She went away to college, and the parents' home moved. That doesn't mean she's necessarily a resident in the household. In fact, she wasn't a resident of the household. On November 1st, 2001, when the policy was issued, she never lived in that house. She didn't have a room there, unlike the South Vienna address. She didn't have the majority of her possessions there. The bulk of her mail didn't go there. Importantly, when we're looking at what she did at that house, when we're looking at the non-existent list, one of the things is whether the student lives under the same roof. For this particular case, she never lived under that roof when this policy was enacted. She visited temporarily.
Counsel, let me ask you, if she didn't have her grandmother's address and her parents moved during her college semester or quarter, we wouldn't be having this conversation, correct?
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, I would disagree. Under Pennsylvania law, you still have to look at the factual circumstances. If she stayed in Kent State and never went home, under Pennsylvania law, I would respectfully argue that you don't carte blanche consider that college student a resident.
When you say never go home, if it's during the semester and she doesn't have the opportunity to be transported to eastern Pennsylvania from Kent, and it's a matter of convenience, expense, or whatever, and she's at college without the grandmother's residence here coming into play, she would have been a resident of the parents' home.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I would disagree, because that analysis, that rubric, goes actually to the intent. That argument means, if she could have, if she was maybe 40 miles away instead of 400 miles away, she really wanted to go back. Pennsylvania law specifically and unambiguously holds that you do not look at intent when you're determining residency. It's actually being in the house. So in this particular case, irrespective of the grandmother, I think that's a huge fact in this case, that she made affirmative steps and actually went to the grandmother's house, made that her residence. Irrespective of that, even if the parents moved away, which they obviously did, you still need to look at a multitude of facts. And the trial court in this case, as the fact finder did, one of those facts is whether she lived under the same roof. In that hypothetical, Your Honor, she would never have been under the same roof. So automatically, there's no presumption, even though we may seem that way in many cases, that we may think of our college kids as our wards still. In Pennsylvania, you actually look at the factual place of abode, whether she went there.
Mr. Newman. Mr. Newman, I would like your position on the Chief Justice's question, because you keep emphasizing Pennsylvania law here. Is this a case we should really be articulating Ohio law based on these specific facts?
No, ma'am, for a couple reasons. One, obviously, we filed a memorandum in opposition to the jurisdiction arguing that Pennsylvania law applied. This isn't of great concern to Ohio. More importantly, the appellant stipulated, and it's in the record, that Pennsylvania law applies. I think this court respectfully must interpret Pennsylvania law, because this was a Pennsylvania contract of insurance. In this particular case, in November 1st, 2001, when the mother purchased this insurance policy, her intent was not to have Catherine Stritzberger, the 18-year-old college student, a named insured, nor even covered. Pennsylvania law was clear, and indeed even Ohio law is, when you're interpreting insurance policies and contracts of insurance, you really want to find what the intent of the parties was. And normally, of course, obviously, you look at the language of the policy. In this particular case, we have affirmative evidence in the examination under oath that the mother specifically stated when she bought this insurance policy, she did not intend for Catherine to be insured. So in this case, for this court to allow Catherine to be an insured in this case, you're basically giving this person, this student, insurance when there was no premium paid for that particular coverage. It was never intended for her to be an insured under that policy, and the mother even says it. More importantly, the mother in this case, when she did tell the police officer after the fact regarding the residence, she affirmatively told that police officer that, quote, Catherine lived with her grandmother, and that was at the time of the accident. More importantly, I believe on page 155 of the examination under oath of Catherine herself, she stated, I didn't live there, meaning her parents' house. What we have here is a case where it's clear that Catherine resided or lived, obviously, in the dorm, but she had firmly took steps to make her residence where she lived the grandmother's house. This was a temporary, sporadic visit to her parents' house. Now, of course, conceptually, we may not want to think when our kids are coming home to visit us that it's maybe temporary. We want to, of course, bring them into the home, and they're always invited, but that's not necessarily the analysis when we're determining whether a college student is a resident, irrespective of whether or not we intend them to come back.
But the policy doesn't say where the student is domiciled. It says where the student has a residence.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Is it your position then that Catherine has no residence with her parents' home in Pennsylvania?
Absolutely, because she took no affirmative steps to establish that residency. Just because the parents moved there in no way, shape, or form means that she's a resident in Pennsylvania. She certainly couldn't vote for that December visit. She certainly didn't get a Pennsylvania driver's license. It is different than a domicile, and I think the cases that we cited differentiate that. There's a definite determination what the word domicile means, and there is intent involved in domicile. Residence, there is no intent. It deals with actually living and residing somewhere. In this case, she visited her parents in Pennsylvania. She never lived there.
Mr. Newman, let me ask you, I'm still searching for a principle of law for us to write here. Mr. Strisberg has given us, of course, the principle of law, the proposition of law, which doesn't include the facts in this case. All of this discussion has been about facts, virtually all of it. What principle of law would you have us write? And you can be a rough drafter here if you want, because I'm catching you without having thought of it, maybe. What principle of law would we write in this case that would assist the courts of Ohio in determining the legal issue that's presented in this case, if there is one?
Your Honor, I think the principle of law would be basically that which was spelled out in Strauss, and that is when there's a Pennsylvania contract of insurance, you need to look at Pennsylvania law in interpreting whether or not a college student is a resident. So that's exactly what Strauss case spells out. The Strauss case specifically and unambiguously laid out Pennsylvania law.
Well, Mr. Strisberg says that this language, this policy language, is common, or at least we find it in a lot of insurance policies. Would that be a reason for us to write on this?
Absolutely not, Your Honor, because that's not the law. Just because insurance policies are common is exactly why, in this particular case, Pennsylvania law requires that you look at a myriad of factors when you're looking at college students. The cases don't necessarily differentiate between whether or not the individual resident in the household is a divorced minor, an emancipated minor, college student, somebody who goes off to camp regularly, somebody who's who leaves the house at multiple times. What you do is you factually look at residence. In this case, there's no proposition under Pennsylvania law to assert that just because a parents moved to Pennsylvania, automatically whoever was a resident of a household in Ohio, or any other state for that matter, somehow becomes a resident of Pennsylvania. There is no. I would respectfully submit that's a legal fiction that the appellant is trying to have this court adopt. The law in Pennsylvania is very clear with respect to that the term resident is unambiguous. It is clear through the Strauss case that I would respectfully request that this court would follow as precedential, or at least persuasive, in interpreting what a court should look at when you're interpreting a policy in relation to a college student.
Counsel, the Court of Appeals said that they could not consider where she lived after the accident. You disagreed with that. Why do you disagree with that?
Well, I disagree specifically with the point of what the mother did. I agree, and I think I mentioned in one part of the brief that it's not determinative, everything after the accident, but it certainly could give some evidence to the fact finder. In this case, I think the Court of Appeals did mention the fact of the mother's conversation. That conversation occurred after the accident, but that conversation, what she said, directly relates to the residence at the time of the accident, even before that. She says the child resided or lived with the grandmother. She could have said, look, she lived with us, it's a Pennsylvania address, or she resides with us. She didn't say that to the cop. She specifically told the sheriff deputy that the address, the residence for this particular individual, was the grandmother's. I think that evidence, even though the actual statement occurred after the accident, clearly it relates to the facts before.
But if she had voted in Pennsylvania after the fact, or gotten a Pennsylvania driver's license after the accident, that wouldn't have mattered.
I don't think it matters, because Pennsylvania law, specifically when they're interpreting cases, whether it's an exclusion or whether you're insured, you look at whether you're a resident at the time of the accident.
Okay, but they just had moved. So, for example, if there hadn't been an election, and the next available election she registers and votes, that wouldn't matter.
After the accident, no. I think you need to look at what you
do. Well, aren't you being a little selective? Because as you just responded to Judge Klatt, when the facts seem to favor you, you can consider it. Well, but if you change the facts and they don't favor you, you wouldn't consider it.
Well, the only fact that I would suggest is determinative, Your Honor, in this case would be the fact that the mother's conversation dealt directly with the living condition, before the accident. That's different than all the facts of whether she lived or whether she took up residency after the accident. In fact, Your Honor's analysis is exactly what the fact finder is supposed to do relative to the date of the accident and even before. That's one of the myriad of factors, whether or not you register to vote, whether or not you maintain an Ohio driver's license or Pennsylvania, what active steps you do to act like that's your household.
Well, couldn't we reasonably find then if the parents, folks had just moved, and the norm is that mom and dad's home is her residence for purposes of policy language like this, if they had just moved and there really wasn't a time or opportunity to develop any further facts, that she gets the benefit of the doubt that she is a resident to where they are.
Well, again, Your Honor, therein lies the rub of your hypothesis that there's a presumption somehow that there's a norm that when the parents move that we automatically assume college students are residents of their parents' household. In fact, even the case that the appellant cites.
Well, I would think that would be sort of the accepted practice in what parents and children think if you don't inject this other issue of in-state and out-of-state tuition. The norm would be that kids in college consider mom and dad's home, wherever mom and dad happen to be.
Conceptually, I would agree with that, Your Honor, but then that goes back to intent. And in this particular case, in Pennsylvania law, you actually are supposed to look at, I believe, the factual place of abode, whether you live there or not. I kind of conceptually agree with you, but in this case, there was something a little different, actually a lot different. The factual place of abode that she was stating affirmatively to all her employers, to her school, to the federal government and the FAFSA application, that's part of the record, or at least the testimony regarding it, is that she affirmatively had stayed in Ohio and made grandmother's house the residence. Even if conceptually, because of the time crunch as Your Honor is proposing, they moved to Pennsylvania, I still think under Pennsylvania law, you have to do that factual analysis. And of course, in this particular case, if the accident occurred maybe within that week window, arguably we'd have a different analysis, but we have different facts in this case.
Counsel, let me ask you a question. You just said her financial aid application, FAFSA, was the grandmother's address?
She says she changed that. I believe her testimony in EUO was her application to Kent State listed her mother's address. And when they moved to Pennsylvania, she, quote, transferred the residence to the grandmother's house. So for the evidence, I believe, even of the mother's testimony, was for all FAFSA applications, whether even employment records, all applications.
Well, FAFSA is done before you go to school.
Correct, but there's also.
And what was the address at that time?
Well, that's actually not in the record. She mentioned that for the application period they used the South Vienna, but she did testify for all FAFSA, even though normally initially that may be done well before for the initial one. Every year you need to do a renewal. The mother even said for 2001 and 2002 on each FAFSA application, whenever it took place, listed grandmother's address, and at no time did it ever include the Pennsylvania address.
Now, it was mentioned that she was able to recover on the grandmother's insurance. Would not she have to be considered a resident of the grandmother's house, or was she a name insured?
She was not a name insured. She was a resident, and that was conceded even at the stipulation by counsel for Cincinnati. There was no dispute that she was a resident, because on December 28, 2001, when she had went back to grandmother's house, that's where she was residing.
So she's not without insurance benefits in this case if we
do
something other than what the appellant wants us to do.
I agree. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Newman. Mr. Spitzberg, you saved almost 7 minutes of your time.
Forgive me for going into some more facts before I get into some law, but I want to challenge some of the things that counsel said on rebuttal. First of all, he said that her mother did not intend for Catherine to be insured. Catherine did not have a license, and Catherine was not named as a driver on the policy. That's all. That doesn't say that she was not insured any more than her two other sisters who were living in Pennsylvania would not have been insured. They were not named on the policy because they weren't drivers. Megan wasn't named on the policy, the oldest child, because she had her own policy on her own car. But Catherine was not named because she didn't have a license. And that is absolutely meaningless. That's a red herring. The policy, if you look at these policies, the only people named on them specifically are those intended to be drivers. If you take a look at the Cincinnati insurance policy in the file, you'll find where it has a place to name drivers. The GEICO policy doesn't even have a place to name drivers, so I guess you have to add the names to that. But to say that she's not insured is ridiculous, because obviously, let's take one of the younger sisters. If she were sitting in another person's car and were injured, the uninsured motorist coverage would apply to her, even though she was not listed on the policy as a driver. So that simply is a red herring.
Counsel, do you agree that where a college student resides for purposes of an insurance policy is a question of fact?
Well, everything in a case is a question of fact.
Well, if it's a question of fact, why is there lacking here some competent, credible evidence to support the trial court's factual finding that this particular student did not live with the parents in Pennsylvania, but lived with the grandmother in Ohio and lived at Kent State?
Well, obviously, the student lived in a dormitory room at Kent State. And there's a lot of confusion as to what happened before the accident and after the accident. Clearly, before the accident, she lived with her parents in their place at South Vienna. All that happened, the only change in the situation, the only change in the equation, was that they moved to Pennsylvania and took the household with them. That's the only change. The shortness of time did not give Catherine a chance to go to Pennsylvania except one time at Christmas. And then that was cut short because she had to return, or else she had no transportation with Megan. So there are a lot of things that happened after this accident, which was a life-altering event. We've used that term in the briefs because so many things changed. She now is a person with a brain injury who has to be treated for it, and she couldn't leave her doctors, or at least they felt that she should stay where her doctors were for treatment. I want to go into another point. Prior to the accident, at no time did Catherine ever have more than a part-time job at Kent State. She had a part-time job at the theater at Kent State. That's it. Any jobs she got were after the accident. After the accident, she could not concentrate. She had made an effort to go back to Kent State and could not concentrate, and her doctor in Springfield told her to withdraw. He said that that often happens in cases of brain injury. So she had to withdraw from Kent State, even though her intention was to go back to Kent State and finish out 4 years. Okay, so everything changed. So when she came back to Springfield to be close to her doctors and living at her grandmother's house, of course she got jobs. And of course she set her residence with her grandmother. This is after the accident, when everything in her life had changed. She didn't end up graduating from Kent State as she would have. She finally ended up in other schools. I think the record shows that she went to Antioch University at the fall of the next year, after a considerable period of time. So, what happened after the accident does not represent the situation as it was before the accident.
Mr. Stidsbury, let me ask you this question. If we write a merit decision in this case, are we bound by both sides have cited Pennsylvania law in determining what is a factual issue here. Are we bound by Pennsylvania law, or can we write our own Ohio version of Pennsylvania law?
I believe that you are dealing, I'm going to try to give an answer that is not exactly yes or no, but which explains what my position is. You are dealing with insurance policy provisions that are similar or identical in various policies all over the United States and in the state of Ohio.
But we don't have those before us, do we, in the record?
Yes, you do.
Do we?
Yes.
But this case is, I thought everybody agreed, this is Pennsylvania law case. Is that
Pennsylvania
not?
Law case.
So
but.
My question is, how are we bound by that? Do we, in our opinion, our decision, are we bound by Pennsylvania law, since it's a Pennsylvania law case, or can we just sort of write our own, look at the facts, and decide the trial court abused its discretion, or decide the Court of Appeals erred?
I'm going to give you an answer that you may not like. I think
I get a lot of those.
Both
it's
ways.
All right.
I think that the Ohio law on the subject is quite important. By the same token, the accident happened in Pennsylvania. The contract was a Pennsylvania contract, albeit 99 and 44 one-hundredths of the wording in the policy, the basic policy parts of this policy are common to virtually every uninsured motorist policy in the United States.
So we could look to Ohio law to define factual place of abode, which is what the Pennsylvania courts have said is the test.
I think so, but remember that I'm not saying that Catherine did not have a factual place of abode with her parents.
Well, I know you don't say that. Yeah. So I'm looking at the law. We decide. I'm frustrated because all this discussion has been about facts, and like I'm trying to find out what's the principle of law that we can write in this case that would be helpful, not just to the parties here.
Judge, you get both sides
but,
of it. If you
but
read,
to the bench and the bar, so we
you
know
look
how
at the
to,
DeBrucker case and the Strauss case. And incidentally, the Strauss case is not reported, whereas the DeBrucker case is. But if you look at those two cases and put them together, I think you get a pretty good idea of what the Pennsylvania law is on factual place of abode and intention. Essentially, my view is that both of them are talking about the interpretation of policies against the insurance company. Like, for instance, in DeBrucker, where you're concerned about where you say normally this girl would have been a resident of her parents' household, the court says, no, she wasn't. Why? Because they're interpreting it against the insurance company. In the Strauss case, where you'd say normally this boy was a resident or was not a resident of his parents' household, the court says he was.
So, counsel, so I understand this. For the purposes of the Cincinnati insurance policy, she was a resident of her grandmother's house. And for purposes of the GEICO Pennsylvania policy, you want her to be a resident of her parents' house.
I think that's correct. Okay. I don't want her to be. I think she was.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've used your time. Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.